Blog Talk Radio.
You miss me? I miss all of y'all. Hey. All y'all girls standing together like that. Keep shaking.
Tonight, this is your host, Coach Terrence Wood, in the BYGP locker room. We are pumped up as usual in the locker room because we have another great guest coming your way. Tonight, we have a man by the name of Reggie Walker Jr. This is somebody that has played college football, but now he works with ESPN and does some things with ESPNU and also ESPN Radio. He's a two-time Emmy-winning associate producer, and this is somebody that has seen how the game of football has morphed into a business and is really going to share some great advice with us and some insights tonight. I think we already have Reggie on the line. Can you hear me tonight, Reggie?
Absolutely. How you doing?
Good, good. And we definitely appreciate having you on, man. I know that you're in a different time zone than California, so we appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. Anytime, no problem.
Perfect. So we're going to get right into it, man, because you've got some great insights into what the game of college football is all about. Plus, we would love to just get into your background and you know, how you ended up at Penn State. So let's dive right into it. For the people that don't know you, Reggie, I know you're in, I believe, Charlotte, North Carolina right now, but where are you originally from?
My background is I'm originally from Memphis, Tennessee. I'm the son of a Navy man, which I take great pride in the things that my father did. Not only in serving the country, but also just in being a leader for me and my wife, and giving me the opportunity to see a lot of different places and experience a lot of different things. I mean, I went to high school and played high school athletics in Central California, and I also played high school athletics in Northern Virginia. So I saw two different, you know, really scopes of the game from a football standpoint, but also two different types of lifestyles. You know, it's a very different culture, West Coast to East Coast, not in a negative way. They're just very, very different. They go about things, you know, sort of a different way in certain aspects. So that's, the long and short of it is those experiences definitely allowed me the opportunity to see a lot of things and just learn a lot of things through experience as opposed to only having the opportunity to read about it or see it on television.
Great point. Was sports and football in particular something that was encouraged in your home, or is that something that you kind of had to go behind dad and mom's back to do?
I'll put it this way. Not sports in particular. Activity was encouraged in my home. My parents always encouraged me to take part in something. Learn an instrument, play a sport, be a part of a club, whatever it was that could help me gain different experiences and work with different people and have other skill sets and create a lifestyle in which I could have a tool of versatility at my disposal was something that my parents always preached. And I think it's something that I continue to live by and I continue to push forward to try to become is a versatile person that can adapt to environments and be productive in any manner that I'm requested to be productive.
Is that something, Reggie, that you feel was, you know, hereditary, that you were just born with, or is that something that you've had to learn throughout the years?
A little bit of both. I think I was indirectly born with it. Again, going back to that military aspect, my father, you know, he just kind of up and went and said, this is what I'm going to do. So maybe I got a little bit of that from him, but on the flip side, having to go to different schools and maybe walk in there that first day and not know anybody and have to integrate yourself into a different culture or around some different folks, that wasn't always the easiest thing to do. But when you get that opportunity and you really have no choice but to do it as a young person, it helps you along the way because, again, that's adapting to new environments. But you're doing it because you have to, not because you want to. So eventually it becomes second nature. And so that's what I take pride in, is being able to enter in any environment from whatever the standpoint is, whether it's professional, personal, social, any of those realms, or even athletic, obviously walking into a new locker room, those things can all help you as you move forward in life because you're walking into these different environments and you're learning how things around you are happening and you're processing, okay, this is the way I'm going to need to approach this. This is the way I'm going to have to handle that. So it forces you to create a little bit more of for lack of a better term, a little bit of chameleon. You have to be a little bit of a chameleon in all walks of life, really, because you have to adapt to situations. That doesn't mean you change who you are. That just means you may have to change how you integrate yourself initially.
I love it, Reggie. Appreciate you sharing that. That's some good knowledge right there. Talk to us a little bit about when you know, the light bulb came on that you could play college football or that was something that you wanted to pursue. Was it a particular play or was it a coach that kind of got you hip to that opportunity? Or tell us a little bit about that.
It was a few things. It was, my first high school coach talked to me about how I had an ability to understand the game well ahead of many other players at my age and my age group. I was always a fairly athletic kid, played a lot of different sports. I played soccer as a kid, basketball, ran track, all those different things. So the athleticism wasn't as much of an issue. But for myself, my father even said that he never felt like I really watched football. I was always kind of studying football. And so for me, it was a mental thing that made me feel as though, after hearing from coaches, man, you have a mental, an acumen, a football acumen that is high, that high football IQ, that told me, you know what, maybe I can play in college. And so then that became something that I made a goal of mine, was to find a way to get on the field at the collegiate level.
Was academics something that came fairly easy to you in high school, Reggie, or is that something that you had to work at?
A little bit of both. It came fairly easy to me. I always was a pretty good student, but my mother and my father, really, they always pushed me to exceed the expectation. You know, in my mother's eyes, an A-minus was okay. But what could I have done to get that A+? You know, was I pushing myself as hard as I could to get to that next grade point? Was I really exerting the energy and effort that I needed to maximize, you know, all of my mental prowess and those types of things? And my sister, my older sister, is an academic. I always call her an academic, one of the smartest people I've ever met. And she also pushed me. And she pushed me to, not that I had, you know, the worst grades in the world, because I always had pretty good grades. I was generally an A-level student, A or B-level student. My sister was an exceptional student, and she would push me and tell me and say things like, you know, you're just as smart as I am. You know, push yourself, get great grades. And that was always something pushed in our household, that, you know, you don't minimize yourself and don't take a shortcut. Always work and do as best you can in the classroom. And my mother used to tell me all the time, if you don't do what you have to do in the classroom, listen, that's what you have to do first. And if you skirt that responsibility, you won't see the practice field.
Do you think that your results would have been different if there wasn't a strong family presence and there wasn't somebody pushing you as far as your mom and dad? Or do you think you would have ended up still achieving the things that you have?
I'll be honest. I'd love to say I would have been okay. But the honest answer is, I don't know. Maybe not, because I think the thing that we can't ever forget, and I'll use myself as an example, we all have our moments where we may slide into a little bit of complacency, especially as young people. And to have my parents there making sure that I was maximizing my efforts, what eventually happened was, now I don't need that encouragement, I don't need that push, because it's natural instinct to do that. And it's because I was always taught, expected, and for lack of a better term, in some ways forced to maximize myself and maximize my efforts. So now it's a natural, I feel like it's a fairly natural thing to always look for ways to be efficient and effective in any and everything I do, whether it's professionally or any other realm, obviously now because I'm not dealing with the life of being in the classroom anymore. But I still take the same approach to it.
Great point. What was it about Penn State? Because, you know, we're based out of California, and we work with young football players across the country. But what was it about Penn State for the kids out here that might not know that really attracted you to that school, that made you say, I want to hang my hat and be a Nittany Lion?
It was a couple of things. I knew, and this is very important for young people to understand when they're looking at colleges, you need to know what environment is going to fit you the best. I knew that for me to stay focused in the right way, that I needed to go to a school that was not in a major metropolitan area. Penn State's in State College, Pennsylvania, in the middle of the state, and the only thing in that town is the university. Yes, there are 40,000 students, which to me was great, but the population of that town is largely based upon the student population in that town. I understood that for me to continue to focus in the right way and do what I needed to do in the classroom, that I needed to be in an environment such as that. So I think that was the first part of it, and that's something that I think young people should really, really understand, is know the environment that's going to be to best fit what you're trying to get accomplished, which, whether you're an athlete or not, your ultimate goal when you go to college should be to graduate and leave there with a piece of paper that lets the world know not only do you have a skill, but you have learned something that you can hang your hat on for the rest of your life if you need to. And then the second part was the history academically that Coach Paterno and the staff there had created. I knew, and my mother knew, that by being at Penn State University and having an opportunity to play football there, if nothing else, I was going to graduate because I was going to have no choice based on my parents and my family as well as the coaching staff at that great university. So, you know, despite the things that we've seen obviously lately that have happened in State College and you know, the different opinions on what really happened, what didn't, all those things, for myself, it was very important, and I continue to take pride in the fact that I went there, played for a legendary coach, and he made sure, without a shadow of a doubt, that I had no choice but to graduate, and I did that.
We all know that Joe Paterno is a legendary coach, and you know, everybody is aware of all the things he accomplished at Penn State. There's a difference for people hearing about a legend and somebody that actually was coached by a legend. What is one of the major takeaways that you had from being coached by Joe Paterno?
I think my biggest takeaway is there's actually a couple of things. I mean, sometimes, you know, you get in environments where, as an athlete, you're looking around and you're seeing these All-Americans flying around, making plays, doing all these different things. And you can almost feel like the coach doesn't know who you are, or they don't know what's going on in your life. But I had a situation where, you know, I was having some issues with a class. It was tough. And I talked to the academic people, and they got me, you know, a tutor and some things. And at the same time, Coach Paterno showed up to the facility one night, one evening, and walked up to my session with my tutor and just asked me how I was doing and asked me if I'm getting the right assistance, and just really took a genuine liking to make sure that I was being properly educated as a part of his program, and that the people were doing the things they needed to do and the support staff to make sure that I was able to succeed academically. I thought that was very important. I thought that was a moment in my life that, again, sometimes you feel like you're just a player on the team. But when your coach shows up and does that, and he did it for multiple players on that particular night, he wanted to know that we were all okay. You know, when you see your coach do that in the evening in his downtime, that lets you know that he cares genuinely about the outcome and what your fate is, not only as a member of his program, but the outlook on your life. And so to me, that was a major thing for myself. And I had multiple conversations with Coach about, you know, decision making and being smart and knowing where to be or not to be, you know, at the right times or the wrong times in life. So there were multiple occasions for me, but I think the one that stands out is certainly when he came to check on me in the academic area one evening when I was working on some academics.
Good story. Talk to us a little bit about your advice for maybe a young player, because you went to Penn State, and is it correct here that I have in my notes, did you walk on at Penn State, Reggie?
I did. I went.
So you, go ahead.
I, you know, for me, it was a situation where, you know, there wasn't a bunch of offers coming out of high school. There were not a lot. And so for me, I wasn't a heavily recruited player, but I always felt like, again, going back to that first coach, my football IQ was strong. I was an athletic kid. Hey, let's go make this work. And for me, that was an accomplishment that, you know, a lot of folks told me, you'll never be able to stick on that football roster. You'll never set foot on the field in a game in that stadium. And you know what? I accomplished those things.
Did you feel like you were prepared once you left high school to compete academically and athletically, or did you feel like it was overwhelming?
I felt like from a mental standpoint, I was prepared in both aspects. Obviously, there was a learning curve at the collegiate level in terms of playbooks and whatnot from a football standpoint. But even more so, I felt like the biggest change for me and the hardest adjustment was time management. You know, there's a coach. Yeah, your coaches are going to tell you, make sure you get your academic work done. But they're not always going to babysit you every step of the way and make you sit there with you for hours upon hours and watch you do your homework or whatever the case may be. Some of that onus comes on you, and even with the professors and the teachers and whatnot in the academic environment, if they tell you to read the chapters, nobody's checking that. That's up to you. But all of a sudden, when you get that exam in front of you, you better know that information. And for me, that was the adjustment, and it wasn't hard, but it was something you had to learn. Man, they're going to hand you a syllabus, and all of a sudden you're going to walk in class on that given day, and they're going to say, what are your papers? Did you write the paper and turn in your paper that you were supposed to write? And if you didn't write it, they're not going to want to hear, oh, I didn't realize it was due today, or, oh, I didn't check my syllabus. They don't care. And I think that's the biggest thing, and that's probably the hardest adjustment for a lot of young athletes and young academics as well. You know, moving into the colleges, they're not going to babysit you. that is not their responsibility. You know, in the high school level now, I know there are a lot of, in different states, there's different things going on, but they have different state tests and all these things, and they want you to pass the certain, whatever this test is, the test scores have to be a certain level so that the state or the city or the county or whatever gets their funding. That's great. But in college, they don't have to do that. The money is there regardless. They don't care if you pass or fail. If you fail, they're going to send you home from that school and move on to the next kid. You have to show them that you want to be there, take the proper steps to continue to be there, and do your work. And if you don't, that's not their responsibility to make you do it. And I think that's the biggest adjustment that folks have to make when they make that step from high school to college, whether they're athletes or not athletes.
So do you believe that the social adjustment, just with the climate of everything going on with these young athletes and some of the off-the-field issues, do you feel like the social component is more critical today than when you were playing?
I wouldn't say the component as a whole. I would say the consciousness of knowing that the realm of even social media and camera phones and those things are out there. The one thing I think that especially athletes need to learn and remember to understand is, whether they like it or not, when you decide that you're going to sign that letter of intent and become a collegiate athlete, you are no longer allowed to be a standard 18, 19, 20-year-old kid. Those days are gone. You're under a microscope. For some people, you're above the law. For other people, they want to knock you down because they have whatever their issue is with the fact that maybe they feel like you're given too much or you don't have to earn this or that. And what these young athletes in particular have to understand is that those targets, just to keep this and be absolutely authentic here, I'm going to use the term groupies. It goes beyond some groupies or some super fans. There are just people, whether it's in some cases local police officers, local media members, whatever the case may be. I'm going to tell you right now, some cops in their head or some reporters or whoever it is, in their head, they're thinking, if I nail one of these football players at Cal, you know, if I'm in Berkeley or at Colorado, if I live in Boulder or at Penn State, if I live in State College, if I nail one of these kids to the wall because he did something he shouldn't have been doing, man, my name's in the paper, that makes my career. And that's what these kids have to understand. Sometimes you're more than just, oh, man, that kid's great. Anything his family may need or, you know, he can always come and say hi to me and I'll ask him for autographs and tell him he's the greatest thing in the world. That there's a lot of those people. But don't let it fool you. There are a lot of people that are saying, I'm waiting for that kid to breathe hard, and I'm going to light him up and tell the world he's not a good kid. Or she.
And that
brings because it happens to female athletes as well.
Definitely. And that brings me to my next point, because we constantly talk to the kids, Reggie, about the blessing and curse. You know, the blessing of being an athlete that has favor, but then also the fact that some people will want to knock you off of that pedestal. In your opinion, Reggie, do you think athletes keep their eyes open for off-the-field opportunities, or do you think they're too closed-minded thinking about the game?
When you say off-the-field opportunities, what do you mean, from a standpoint of just the social realm or of just, you know, just hanging out, or like more professional opportunities?
I'm actually talking about, to a certain extent, all of them, whether it's opportunities to network with people, opportunities to prepare themselves for life after football. Do you think that they're open-minded, or do you think too many athletes are kind of living in the here and now?
I think many of them live in the here and now, and unfortunately, I say this all the time because it's a tough discussion to have with a young athlete because in a lot of cases, they've been told their entire life, you're not going to be good enough to be great in high school, or you're not going to be good enough to play in college. So all of a sudden, they get to 21 years old and they're playing in college. You start telling them, well, you're not going to be good enough to play in the pros, so you might as well forget that. Some of them, they can't process that because they're still looking at it as, now here's another person telling me I can't do something. So they get caught up in the situation where they're still wanting to prove folks wrong and show that they have an ability. But I think at the same time, sometimes when they do that, they lose the realistic situation that surrounds them in terms of just because you feel as though you may have a chance to play collegiately or you do play professionally, that does not mean you should ignore what, you know, for lack of a better term, some of the realities are in that that opportunity may not happen or it may be very short-lived. So you need to prepare yourself for the back end just in case. And I think what happens is they're almost jaded by the concept of, well, here's, they just look at it like, here's just another person telling me I can't, when that may be a realistic thing at that point. But it's tough because we always tell young people, don't let anybody take your dreams. Don't let anybody tell you you can't do something. Don't let anybody tell you you're not good enough. And we should be telling them that. We should encourage them in that realm. But at the same time, that's where we've got to be a little bit stronger with them in laying out those things, whether it's putting the data in front of them or whatever it may be, to let them grow and understand and know that it doesn't always work like that. I think one thing that maybe we need to do more of and explain to young athletes is, listen, one city may have 20 high schools, but in that state, they may only have 6 colleges.
Yeah.
And if you use football as an example, all of a sudden, there's only 32 NFL teams with 53 guys on that roster. So you're talking about a pool of players at the high school level that starts at probably in excess of 2 million, a million at least, somewhere in that realm. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, it's about 1.4.
Right. Then all of a sudden you get to the collegiate level, and it's less than 500,000.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you get to the NFL level, and you're talking about less than 5,000 players.
Yeah.
The reality is, you're probably not going to make it. Percentages say that. But I think the tough part is explaining that to young people while not trying to sound as if you're taking their dream or trying to shatter their dream. And that's why I think it's important. And I say this a lot, and it's unfortunate, but first of all, let me say to all the good parents, I respect them to death. But sometimes your child, hearing it from you, they just look at you as a parent trying to tell them what to do. And so it's important for folks like yourself, myself, our business partners, those types of people, to also talk to the young people that are not their kids and just give them that realistic advice so that they don't look at it as, oh, this is just my parent trying to control me. No. This is somebody that understands how this works and can put the numbers in front of you and show you and illustrate to you exactly what you're facing so that you can make sure you're prepared for other options. Again, there's no fault on parents. That's just, at least from my experience, even when I was a kid, that was an innate thing that at times I had to get past was my mother would tell me something and I'm thinking, man, this is just my mom trying to tell me I can't do something. But then when my mentor, a guy by the name of Eric Thompson, when he tells me the same thing my mom tells me before he even hears my side of the story, it rings true in my head. And I start to understand, I started to understand as a 16-year-old kid, 17-year-old kid, sitting at IHOP mad at my mom because I feel like she's being hard on me, and he's explaining to me the same thing she's saying without even hearing her say it, it starts to resonate. You know what? My mom is out. She's not just being difficult with me. That's, she's caring about me and trying to give me realistic information. And sometimes these kids, they have to hear it from a different entity than their parent, not because their parents are not trying or doing a good job, but because they look at their parents as a pure authority figure, and they can't get past that sometimes with bits and pieces of advice.
That is great advice and a great point right there, Reggie, and we definitely appreciate it. And we're going to close out with one last question. And for those that are just joining us, we have Mr. Reggie Walker, Jr. He has worked with ESPNU, ESPN Radio, former college football player at Penn State University. So this is definitely a treat tonight, and hopefully you kids are getting something out of this, and parents and coaches as well. A lot of kids would love to eventually work with a company like ESPN, and they obviously see the highlights and the great side of things. I know as well as you do, it's a lot of hard work. But can you talk to us a little bit, Reggie, about how you position yourself for that opportunity? And was that something that you were conscious of while you were playing football, or did the ESPN light bulb come on after football?
It was something I was conscious of in school. What happened, I initially went to school, I was gonna major in marketing, and my plan was to become a sports agent. I took one business law class, which I did really well in, and I took a labor and industrial relations class. You know, obviously labor law for being an agent, you're going to need to know those types of things. And I realized while I could do well and I handled the information well at the collegiate level, there was no way I was going to sit and handle paperwork and read those long contracts and all that stuff for the rest of my life. It just was not in my DNA. I'm not a sit-still guy. And I figured that out quickly. So what I did is I did some research, and I figured out, you know, because I knew I wanted to be around sports in some way, shape, or form in my life. So what I did is I did some research, and I figured out, you know what, this television, radio, communications world, this may make more sense for me. And so I did that, and luckily for myself, I had some friends in college that were radio DJs. Some, you know, obviously working for the local station, but also, you know, they would DJ in clubs and those types of things. So I was able to talk with them, and one of them was able to help me get an internship at the local group of stations there in State College in marketing and promotions. And I would go around with the marketing director and be a part of remote broadcasts and deal with meetings to sit down with sponsors for different broadcasts and those types of things, and really start to learn the back end of the business. And then in addition to that, I kind of fell into an opportunity. Obviously, you get to some smaller towns throughout the country, and they have radio broadcasts of high school football. That exists in State College, Pennsylvania. They had a situation where one of their, essentially their analysts, was he had to take some time off, and they asked me if I'd be willing to fill in. Our season was basically we weren't heading the postseason in terms of Penn State. So I was able to, as a part of my internship, getting those credits, I was able to take that experience and work in the booth and actually be on the air and call some football games and start to see it from a different light. But those opportunities, I had an opportunity to intern at MSNBC in Washington, D.C., so those types of things I was aware of early. I did those in the summertime. You know, a lot of athletes, they stay on campus the entire summer. I don't think that's a bad idea. But at the same time, if you've got an opportunity to go to your hometown or go to a different city and get an internship at a reputable organization for the first part of that summer and work out on your own and then go back, hopefully in shape, that's what your coaches are going to expect, and continue to work out with your team, it can't hurt you. And that's something that I realized early, and I was able to do that. And that's what put me in a situation where I am now, to work for a company like ESPN. And while I love my job, and I will tell anybody it is a great place to work, the one piece of advice I would give anybody, I love my job. I love working for a company like ESPN. I'm doing what I want to do with my life. But I will always remember, know, and understand, it is my job. I'm a professional. It is my career. And the company still has a business to run.
Well said. Well said. And the kids definitely need to hear that. So you guys listening tonight, you guys that are going to listen out for the archives of this show, this is a job. The business of football is definitely a business, whether you're on the media production side or whether you're on the field. So treat it that way. Hey, Reggie, that was a great job, man, and we appreciate your time and just fabulous content. And you're a friend of the program. We definitely want to have you back on someday.
Absolutely. Just reach out to me anytime. I'm definitely willing and able to be available anytime that I can. And I appreciate you having me on. And I thank all the listeners for, you know, really taking a liking to and a focus and listening every week and looking to get some knowledge out of the show. I think it's important that they continue to do that because you can never have too much information.
Great stuff. And for those that want to follow you, I know you're big on Twitter. It's at rwalk13, right?
Yes, sir, at rwalk13, R-W-A-L-K-1-3.
Perfect. All right, Reggie, you have a great night, and we'll be talking to you.
Thank you very much. You do the same.
All right, so for those that were listening tonight, hopefully you guys got a bunch out of what Mr. Walker was talking about. This is somebody that has played in front of 106,000 people at Penn State and then has transitioned to have a magnificent business career with ESPNU and ESPN Radio. And that is a contact of ours. That is a part of the BYGP network where, you know, eventually maybe one day he can help you get an internship with ESPN. So we have another great show coming to you guys with Mr. Chris Hale on Thursday. This is a former NFL player. He's got a bunch of great things to share with our audience. So tune in Thursday, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. If you guys haven't checked out all of the content that Before You Go Pro is providing, go to our website, www.beforeyougopro.com. We have all of our social networking links at the bottom of the homepage. Check out what's going on with the company. Definitely check out our brand new book, and we hope that that can add some value to your career and your journey as a young football player. So signing off for the rest of the BYGP team, our executive producer, Ashley Goodman, I am your host, Coach Terrence Wood. You guys have a good one. We'll see you at the top.
You miss me? I miss all of y'all.